Have a quorum. Please
I'm
pray.
sorry, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, I'm jiggy. I put it in my calendar for next week. Sorry about that.
No worries. No worries.
Thank you, Jaggy. Appreciate you being able to be here today. All right. With that, since we have a quorum, I will call this meeting to order. And let's start with a roll call, please.
Okay. We're going to start with advisory members first. So with that, we have Representative Michael Carbone. Okay. J.R. Sloan.
Here.
Rebecca Pereira, in for Richard Stabnik.
Here.
Okay, now I will do a roll call for voting members. Jagadasan Krishnamurthy.
Present.
Brian Kirkland.
Here.
Eddie Cook. Stuart Brunner, in for David Byers.
Yeah, I'm present.
Lev Gonick.
Here.
Ryan Murray.
I am here.
Okay, Mr. Chairman, we have a quorum.
All right. Thank you, Donna. Welcome, everybody, to our December. We can call it the holiday edition of ITAC. There will be no flashing lights, though. At least we don't expect any. All right. I want to remind everyone that we do follow public meeting law in this, and we will take public comments. On the agenda is a link to in order to submit comments. And if you have something to submit, please use that link, and the staff will then disposition that for you. All right. I will go ahead and ask staff, did we receive any conflict of interest forms related to any of the items on the agenda today?
We did not, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, thank you very much. I will remind our voting members, if you recognize that you may have a conflict at any point in the meeting before we get to a voting item, please let me know, and we will handle the filling out the form after the fact, but we'll make sure we note that in our for the official record. I do know that we do have an item where we will probably have an abstention, and I think that's going to be our consent agenda item. So I will go ahead and call out now that Mr. Brunner, who's standing in for Mr. Byers, will likely be abstaining from voting on the consent agenda item since it does relate to office of the courts.
That is correct, Mr. Chairman.
All right. Thank you very much, Stuart. So we've noted that for the record. With that, I will go ahead and I want to let folks know January will be our first, January 17th will be the next meeting for ITAC. Stuart, what do you got?
Nope, just waiting for the minutes review. I was in there in a little early.
Okay, I get ready. Here it comes.
Okay.
Next item will be, I'll take a motion with regard to approval of the November 15th recording as our minutes.
Mr. Chairman, this is Stuart. I need to abstain because I have not reviewed the recording of the minutes.
I don't think you're 0 for 2 now, Stuart.
I need help.
Anyone else?
Lev Gonick, happy to move.
All right. Thank you, Lev. Do we have a second?
Chad, this is Jaggy. I second.
Thank you, Jaggy. All right. Noting Stuart's abstention, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. And we've noted Stuart's abstention there. Okay. Next, we will handle our consent agenda. There's only one item in the consent, but we will handle the consent agenda as a single motion with unless there's any desire from the committee to get into a discussion here. Do we have a motion?
Lev again, happy to move a motion to proceed with the consent agenda as circulated.
Thank you, Lev. Do we have a second?
I'll second.
Thank you, Brian. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? And again, noting Stuart's abstention. All right, that was, we'll say unanimous for those voting. All right. Next, we are into change requests. And the first change request that's up for review will be the Department of Revenue.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Charles Brown. I am the State Deputy CIO with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today with members of the project team at the Department of Revenue to review the STARS, which is the Integrated Tax System Modernization Project. On June 16th of 2023, Asset recommended and ITAC approved the original PIDG RV23006 for the discovery and planning phase. During the original project approval, it was disclosed the planning and discovery phase would total 18 months. However, original approval request was for 6 months. Department of Revenue, with ADOA Assets recommendation, is returning for a change request to add the subsequent 12 months into that 18-month discovery and planning phase. At the November ITAC meeting, this change request was presented and tabled by the committee as it sought greater detail and understanding the initial procurement process, deliverables for the discovering and planning phase, overall project schedule, and additional breakdown in the planned budget and payment schedule. ADOA Asset and the Department of Revenue team have worked together to compile all of the requested information that ITAC had requested in November. Ahead of the target date of January, and are back to present the change request. ADOA Asset is recommending, and Department of Revenue is requesting the approval of that. I am now going to turn it over to Robert Woods, Director of the Department of Revenue, who's going to introduce the change request, the project team, and start the presentation. Mr. Woods.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thanks, Chuck. My name is Robert Woods. I'm the director of the Department of Revenue. I appreciate your time today. We are here today to hopefully answer some of the lingering questions from our prior visit to ITAC, as well as some other questions that have been generated after that meeting. My role on this project, I'm the executive sponsor. For a project this large, I don't believe that a director can or should delegate that to anyone else. So this project has my daily attention. I have brought quite a few folks from the agency here today that are prepared to respond to virtually any questions that you have, and we welcome those questions. I am going to turn it over to Neeraj, though, to walk through a few prepared materials, and we'll look forward to any questions that occur after that. Thanks, Chuck. Neeraj, I'll hand it over to you.
Neeraj, you're muted.
Duly noted, sir. Sorry about that. Can you advance the slide by one, like, just go back? One more? Thank you. So thank you, Rob, Mr. Chairman, and members of the committee. My name is Neeraj Deshpande, and I'm the Deputy Director of the Arizona Department of Revenue. I would like to introduce to you the key staff members who are here as subject matter experts in their field to help answer any questions you may have. You heard from the director, and you heard that I'm Neeraj Deshpande. Introduced Ranveer Samra, who is the Chief Information Officer for Department of Revenue, Thomas Rykoff, Deputy Chief Information Officer from DOR, Zach Sharp, Deputy Assistant Director from ADOR, Joey Estrada, Budget Director from DOR, Laura Lee Hudgens, STARS Senior Project Manager at DOR, Charles Brown, Deputy Chief Information Officer from DOA, John Redhorse is actually attending in the place of Mr. Hillebrand, Michael Hillebrand, who was not able to make it. So Rob Rizwan is the Vice President and the STARS Project Manager for GCOM, and Rahul Puri is the Chief Product Officer from GCOM. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm here to provide you the STARS project overview. As mentioned in the beginning of the meeting, we are returning to the committee after STARS change request was tabled during the ITAC, November ITAC meeting. The original plan was to return in January, but after further discussion with ADOA and ADOR leadership, it was determined that it would be best for the project to return for this December meeting. As a reminder, from the November meeting, the committee had numerous questions around procurement process that was conducted by the State Procurement Office, specific contract details, payment schedule information, the professional license fee that was negotiated, and specific deliverables that are scheduled to be delivered during the planning and discovery phase. We do appreciate all of these questions and feedback on this important project. Since the November meeting, DOA and ADOR teams have been working in close partnership, and for which I'm extremely thankful for, to provide the additional information. Today, we will be providing the information in two parts. First, we will be giving an overview of the entire project, an overview of the procurement process that was conducted by SPOC, State Procurement Office, including two key statutory requirements and the timeline of the events that occurred. We also review the selected vendor's experience, the overall governance structure of the project, the proposed solution, some early win opportunities that are currently being considered, and the overall project budget. From there, we will transition over to the change request that we are requesting, humbly requesting the approval from the committee today so the project can continue to the end of the planning and discovery phase. Next slide, please. As stated in the June 2023 IDEC meeting, the overall scope of the STARS project is to replace the Department System of Record, the Taxpayer Accounting System, which we would call TAG, with a single integrated tax system that will house all business functions for all of the department's tax types. Also included in this effort will be a full replacement of the department's current external facing portal AV taxes, as well as the various reporting and shadow systems that are currently utilized for operations. TAS was originally procured in the early 2000s by the state. The implementation lasted through 2009. After the close of the implementation, TAS continued to be improved to its current state today. Over the years, the department has had to create additional shadow systems to cover for the limitations of TAS. In most cases, these feeder systems do not directly integrate with TAS. In addition, TAS does not have a robust case selection and management system to support department activities. This lack of tools sets the department back amongst its peers when it comes to selecting accounts for potential taxpayer education programs. Department also has numerous open Auditor General findings that the current systems could not address, including the need for additional reporting analytics to discover misreported TPT, which is a transaction privilege tax, at the time of filing, end-to-end address standardization, and analytics to support taxpayer education program. In addition, in the subsequent sunset audit, the department accepted a finding that required it to begin an integrated tax system replacement planning. Lastly, the department's current external facing portal does not include all tax types, and it doesn't offer services that we all expect today. To remedy these issues, the department requested and received fiscal year 2023 appropriation to begin the process for a full tax replacement. Replacing these legacy systems with a modern integrated tax system will improve overall tax administration, customer user experience, and compliance, provide expanded electronic services, and will bring analytics that will drive the reduction of the Arizona tax gap. Next slide, please. Now that we have provided background and the preparation information, we will move over to the solicitation process. In addition to standard procurement code, the state also had two additional statutory requirements to follow during the procurement process. The first requirement did not allow the state procurement office to disqualify an offeror based on the number of years spent developing IT systems, number of tax systems implemented, and required Department of Revenue to review any proposal from an offeror who had previously delivered a tax system in whole or in part. The second requirement is centered around minimum data fields required for querying, reporting, tax modeling functionality, and required the JLBC and OSPB had direct access to these tools. Next slide, please. The Arizona State Procurement Office, SPO, officially led the procurement process for the new integrated tax system. Facilitated by Grant Thornton, the request for proposal was completed in conjunction with Department of Revenue, SPO, and key stakeholders. The request for proposal was officially released on September 1, 2022, with a bid due date of November 3, 2022. The state received four bids ranging from $78 to $235 million over a 15-year contract term. After review by SPO and the financial team, it was determined that one of the four bids was within the project budget. At this time, the qualified bid was forwarded to the evaluation team, who performed the individual evaluation. After individual evaluation, the state conducted a formal demonstration and a hands-on lab session with the qualified bidder. Over 40 department staff attended the demonstration, including two from the city. Staff members who attended were given the opportunity to provide feedback through a Google form. That feedback was collected from staff was positive overall. I was part of that. We were in the room from 8 o'clock sometime to 6 o'clock in the evening from Monday through Friday. And then we had further questions and the vendor came back on a Monday demonstrating the end-to-end solution for us. Next, the evaluation team completed the group eval, which resulted in SPO extending an invitation to the qualified bidder to participate in the best and final offer process, which we call BAFO. The BAFO process was conducted, resulting in an agreement between the state and vendor on final terms. This included revisions to the payment schedule, service level agreement, the overall project phasing schedule, and a one-time perpetual license fee for the entire length of the contract. Upon agreement, the vendor was selected for the award on February 22, 2023. Next slide, please. The next slide shows a high-level procurement timeline. The procurement timeline covers the release of the RFP in September 2022 through the contract award in June of 2023. It takes us through key procurement activities such as RFP bidding, evaluation and demonstration, as well as the final vendor selection and the best and final offer negotiation. It also includes the JLPC and ITAC approval for the first 6 months of the discovery and planning phase. I repeat, it includes JLPC and ITAC approval for the first 6 months of the discovery planning phase. Next slide, please. In the end, the state has executed a 15-year, $79.1 million contract with GCOM Software LLC and its subcontractor Kyndryl to provide an enterprise platform for the integrated tax administration. From here forward, we will call the vendor and its subcontractor team GCOM. I want to remind the chairman and the committee that we did 15 years because we did kind of studies and found out that after 5 years, the sixth and seventh year, if you're trying to engage the vendor for maintenance, they could spike up the cost. So we learned from that process. So we decided, let's pursue the whole 15-year contract. The full RevHub integrated tax system will be built upon RevHub's existing modern application platform, which is used in other states. To fulfill Arizona-specific tax system requirement, the project will include both configuration and development. As referenced in our business case, the RevHub ITS will contain all tax-tied businesses functions that are administered by the departments. It will have an external facing tax portal that will provide taxpayers a single place to transact with the department, regardless of tax type. It'll contain a single case management system that will be used for all taxpayer interaction conducted by authorized user within the system. It also contains the income modeling functionality that OSBB and JLBC will greatly benefit from that is required by statute. On the technology side, the RevHub platform utilizes technology that is used by modern applications developed today. Next slide, please. Now that we have covered the solution, we would like to introduce you to the vendor and the product experience. May I take a moment and say that I came to Department of Revenue in 2016 and GCOM was already there. So I have personal experience working with them over the last 7-8 years. GCOM Software LLC acquired ASR Analytics in 2021. ASR Analytics specializes in the utilization of machine learning algorithms to detect and prevent individual income tax fraud. Prior to the acquisition, ASR had existing contracts in place with a number of other states, as well as the IRS. ASR also developed the RevHub platform, which was included in the GCOM acquisition. You can see all of the original ASR contracts by looking at ASR in parentheses in the slide. Team GCOM's key clients include the Controller of Maryland, going back to 2010. Over that time, over $500 million of fraudulent income tax refunds have been stopped. Other relevant experience with Maryland has been the BRE reallocation initiative. This was a special project requiring Team GCOM to update the computational processes related to the geolocation of every Maryland tax return over the 7-year period from 2010 and 2016. This is a key as it shows prior experience performing revenue distribution calculation with a high volume of returns. There have been DOR's partners going back to fiscal year 2016, like I said earlier on, The relationship has been very fruitful for the state and its stakeholders, as it has prevented over $200 million in fraudulent income tax refunds, generated over $4.5 million in individual income tax audit assessments, prevented $4.6 million in correct refunds through withholding data matching, and has also generated $6.5 million of TPT revenue, transaction privilege tax revenue, under remote seller marketplace facilitator revenue discovery programs. Mr. Chairman, I get choked up on this, so I can just get a glass of water, sir. GCOM is also a subcontractor for the California Franchise Tax Board, FFT, SDB's modernization project. SDB is currently developing a custom integrated tax system to which GCOM will provide analytical models for compliance activity. These analytics include the ingestion of federal tax information, FTI, so publication 1075 compliance is required. Next slide, please. GCOM also has a contract Missouri Department of Revenue, stopping over $113 million in individual income refund fraud, as well as over $100 million in audit assessments. Moving out of the tax arena, GCOM has designed, developed, and deployed eVital applications for New York City Department of Health and Medical Hygiene, eVital reports, life events, and issues vital records for New York City. Finally, we have Kindrel, subcontractor for GCOM, who will be handling the back end of the platform. Kindrel is currently providing similar managed services and infrastructure support to 24 states, including the state of Arizona. Kindrel provides managed services to ADOT Motor Vehicle Division. This contract includes maintenance and system modifications on the servicearizona.com, avmbdnow.gov portals currently used by citizens and businesses of Arizona to conduct motor vehicle related transactions with AVMBD. Next slide, please. Project governance. The STARS project governance structure includes internal, interagency, and external government partners, governance partners. ADR's internal governance includes the project steering committee, agency business team, and the project management office. These teams consist of leaders from across the organization who bring valuable insight and experience. Interagency governance includes trusted state partners who provide oversight to ensure technology and project excellence. The Tax System Modernization Committee is required by statute and includes members from state agencies, legislatures, cities and towns, business communities. All projects over $5 million require external oversight from an IVNV vendor. As part of the RFP process, ADR, under the guidance and oversight of DOA, selected Gartner for the STARS project. Next slide, please. The STARS project timeline covers project initiation on August 8, 2023, to the completion of the final implementation phase in 2028. This high-level timeline begins with the discovery and planning phase, which is scheduled for 18 months and leads to the implementation phases 1 through 4. The purpose of the discovery and planning phase is to prepare the way for the implementation of DOR tax and fee types. In addition to planning activities, it also includes delivery of critical pre-implementation activities, such as technical design, system security plan, IRS engagement for FedRAMP authorization, implementation of the cloud infrastructure, and the RevHub application install and configuration. ADUR is also considering early opportunities. We are considering early opportunities within this time frame to add value, which will be discussed in more detail in later in the presentation. The current estimated timeline for implementation for phases 1 through 4 includes the delivery of minor tax/fee types such as luxury and specialty taxes in phase 1, and major tax and fee types such as corporate, individual, transaction privilege tax, property and associated tax types in phases 2 through 4. These phases will be further refined as part of the discovery and planning phase. Next slide, please. The STARS project will implement GCOM's RevHub application, an enterprise platform for tax administration and analytics. As mentioned in the previous slide, the purpose of the discovery and planning phase is to prepare the way for implementation. The key objectives of the discovery and planning phase will be to deliver value. It'll be to deliver value in the following key areas: project planning. The outcome of the phase includes several key deliverables, such as project plan, resource and cost management plans, as well as the implementation plan and schedule that will govern the rollout of the tax and C-types in phases 1-4. Discovery and planning activities also enable GCOM the opportunity to engage internal and external stakeholders early and align with DOR's core business and functional requirements. Infrastructure design and implementation. As mentioned, the phase also includes the delivery of critical pre-implementation activities, such as the design and implementation of secure cloud infrastructure and the install of the RevHub application, which will also support possible early opportunities. Configuration and development. These activities pave the roadmap for the configuration and development of the RevHub application. Core functionalities, the scope of the discovery and planning phase also includes core functionality that crosses all tax types, such as external facing portal, license registration, payment processing, returns processing, taxpayer accounting, compliance modules, revenue accounting, revenue distribution to the state agencies, towns, cities, and counties, and also AG360. It interfaces with our AFIS ERP. Next slide, please. As part of the planning and discovery phase, the project team is considering a few early opportunities that will bring the state and its stakeholders value throughout the phase of the project. I repeat, as part of the planning and discovery phase, the first 18 months, we are considering a few early opportunities. The first opportunity being considered is the introduction of GCOM's analytical models into the department's current state compliance system. As mentioned earlier on in GCOM's vendor experience, other states who have contracted with GCOM have realized increased additional benefits in the hundreds of millions of dollars by utilizing their analytical models. These early opportunities will accelerate the introduction of these models into department's current state system. The overall goal of this early opportunity will be to utilize these analytical models to accelerate the collection of the state's outstanding accounts receivable, which in the end will bring additional revenue for the state and its stakeholders. These models will be moved over to new ITS as the project progresses through phase 1-4. Mr. Chairman and committee members, may I remind you earlier on, I had mentioned that department uses RevHub and uses GCOM for their analytical ability to go and find out who are the out-of-state vendors selling goods to the Arizona, and are they paying their fair share for TPT? And we discovered about $4-5 million. I mean, they're bringing in like $1 million every month. I'm part of the project, so I know the project very closely. So I just want to kind of bring you that. I mean, we engage them to go and discover things for us, and they use their analytics to do that. The second early opportunity being considered is the early rollout of RevHub Tax Policy Simulator. I repeat, early rollout of TaxHub Tax Policy Simulator. The RevHub Tax Policy Simulator was procured to meet the income modeling requirements that was mentioned back in the procurement slide. This early opportunity will be a win for DOR and policymakers, as it will make more recent data available for income modeling purposes. It will also reduce the current annual workload that is required to stand up and maintain current income tax modeling. Finally, it will give policymakers direct access to income modeling functionality earlier on in the project. OSPB, JLBC will have access to it. Next slide, please. This slide outlines the discovery and planning phase, 18-month timeline by quarter, and the associated deliverables and payment milestones. Invoice payments are dependent upon quarterly deliverable milestones from 1-7. For example, in September, quarter one was invoices paid after ADR confirmed that all milestones one were completed. Next slide, please. As outlined in the JLBC Fiscal Year 23 Appropriation Report for the Automation Project Fund, the budget presumed a total of $63.8 million from general fund, and the remaining budget of $41 million will be appropriated from the Integrated Tax System Project Fund. The six-year spending plan has a fiscal year appropriation which fluctuates throughout the project. Each fiscal year will have a timeline of 2 years to expend the appropriation. This table outlines the appropriation by fiscal year, category of expense, timeline as to when DOR will expend the funding over the next 5 years, with the last row showcasing how much will be spent through the fiscal year The category details include the cost according to the vendor, BAFO payment schedule, IBNV, ADUR, as well as a projected contingency. The total budget for this project is anticipated to be expended by the end of fiscal year 28. Next slide, please. As you can see in this table, we have received the approval to spend 2023 appropriation, which is expected to be fully expended by mid-February 2024. Our current request is to start spending the fiscal year 24 appropriation mid-February. When the funds of fiscal year 23 have been exhausted, the funding will take us through mid-fiscal year 25. We anticipate that the remaining funds from fiscal year 24 appropriation will be approximately $2.7 million. Oh.
Mr. Chairman, if we could pause for a quick second. Les, take us back. You're ahead by one. Thank you.
I apologize. Thank you for that. Okay. So are we on slide 17? That's what it looks like. No. Spending. Project budget. Spending projection.
Spending projection.
Okay. Got it. I'm with you. My apologies. As you can see in this table, we received the approval to spend the fiscal year 23 appropriation, which is expected to be fully expended by February fiscal year 24. Our current request is to start spending the fiscal year 24 appropriation mid-February, when the funds of fiscal year 23 have been exhausted. The funding will take us through mid of fiscal year 25. We anticipate that the remaining funds from fiscal year 24 appropriation will be $2.7 million. Next slide, please. At a high level, our original budget submission for this project was $104.8 million. And we have planned expenditures for $104.4 million. We estimate at the present time that there will be approximately $400,000 in unspent funding overall. Next slide, please. The next part of the presentation will provide an overview of the STARS project change request, which covers the discovery phase from February 2024 through February 2025. Next slide, please. Now that we have given you the overview of the entire project, now on to today's request. The scope of this plan change request is to align budget schedule milestones to the contract. As mentioned earlier, the contract requires an 18-month discovery and planning phase. The fiscal year 23 appropriation that was favorably approved by ITAC and JLBC is scheduled to be fully utilized by February 2024, which is 6 months into this phase approval for this change request to begin the process for approval to begin spending the fiscal year 24 appropriation that was signed into law last summer. It will also align the current pitch to include the full 18 months, which is scheduled to end in February of 2025, as well as incorporating all the project milestones agreed to by ADOR and GCOS. The project team is humbly requesting a change request to incorporate the remaining 12 months of the discovery and planning phase into the current pitch. This is a planned change request due to the full utilization of fiscal year 23 appropriation through the first 6 months of the discovery and planning phase. This change request will extend the overall timeline from February 8, 2024 to February 7, 2025. We'll incorporate all the milestones for the full 18 months and will increase the overall budget to $31.1 million. This funding increase will incorporate the fiscal year 2024 appropriation that was approved by the legislature and the governor last summer. This change will also align the project milestones that were originally developed prior to the award of its contract to GCON's project strategy and schedule documents. Next slide, please. This plan change will bring the budget, scope, and schedule in alignment with the 18-month discovery and planning phase. This high-level timeline shows the original pitch schedule from the project start in August to February 2024, a total of 6 months. It also shows the revised timeline for the plan change request, which is 12 months in taking us to the completion of the 18-month discovery and planning phase in February 2025. Next slide, please. As part of the plan change request, the original milestones have been aligned with GCOM's project strategy and schedule document. The original milestones that have no revisions are scheduled to complete its plan as part of START project initiation. Next slide, please. The rest of the original milestones that have been revised were previously due to the end of, were due at the end of 18 months per contract. So we have extended the timeline to align with the 18-month schedule. For example, the implementation plan and schedule are due per contract in Feb 2025 at the end of the discovery and planning phase. Next slide, please. New milestones have also been added to align with the remainder of the 18-month planning phase. These milestones reflect activities in the subsequent 12 months. Key new milestones include the completion of the remainder of the discovery and planning activities, which aim to develop a deep understanding of the requirements of ADR's business, needs, and processes. The delivery of committed deliverables outlined in GCOM's project strategy and scheduled documents, such as requirements, traceability matrix, technical environment design, data conversion, and system security plans. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, the STARS project team humbly and respectfully presents this plan change request for your approval. The STARS project is on track and has completed several key accomplishments in the last 4 months, including project kickoff, initiation of discovery and planning activities, as well as implementation of the base cloud infrastructure and the RevHub application. This change request will extend the overall timeline from February 8, 2024 to February 7, 2025. It will also incorporate all the milestones for the full 18 months. And it will request a portion of the fiscal year 24 appropriation, increasing the overall budget to $31.1 million. Our request is for $16.7 million of the fiscal year 24 appropriation that will cover the cost of the discovery and planning phase. Due to the allowance of having 2 years to spend the appropriation, the spending plan will cross over into fiscal year 25 and fund project operations through February 2025. Next slide, please. This table provides the breakdown of the request. We humbly and respectfully request the favorable consideration from you, Mr. Chairman, and the committee of the STARS project change request you see on the slide for about $16.7 million. Next slide, please. Mr. Chairman, committee members, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for us to come back again and to answer any questions. I personally will do my best to answer all the questions. This is a very complex project. And thank you for the time. It was a long presentation. We did need to give you the entire overview from where we were, where we started, the procurement process, the entire budget, and now the specific ask for today. So I humbly request your approval, and I'm open to your questions.
All right. Thank you, Niraj. And I do appreciate the detailed review that you provided to us. You've got 30 seconds to catch your breath while the committee gets their questions queued up. So, committee, I will open it up to you to start with questions. Rebecca, you win.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Niraj, thank you so much for this update. I think the updated documents on your timeline, the milestones, and what the expenditure plan looks like is very helpful to see where you started and where you are in terms of this project. So I really do appreciate all the work DOR put into this presentation. I have a couple of questions, Mr. Chair. My first question is, you have a slide about the early wins, and I know you've talked to our office about what that could look like in terms of the tax stimulation policy. But then when I was looking at the milestones, both the slides you presented with the squares and then the milestones with the dates, it was hard for me to see where that early win fits in terms of the milestones you have laid out.
Rebecca, thank you for the question. I want to make a clarification. Department of Revenue worked really hard, but we really worked hard with the guidance and assistance from Mr. Brown, Mr. Sloan, and the entire team. And it was a partnership, so it helped quite a bit. Now to answer your question, it's on the table. And while we are in this phase, we want to make sure is that we explore all the options as to when exactly we'll be able to deploy this. I believe your question was when exactly is this going to get deployed?
And more on, because I don't think you know that yet, and it's part of the discussion. And I know it's an early one you've identified. My question is, how does that fit, though, in the milestones, which look more on planning, developing documentation? How does the payment structure work if there is this potential implementation of a a functioning portion of the system.
So there are two questions there, correct? Is how does the early win line up with the other timeline? And the question is about the money. So I'll settle with the money because JLBC, you know, budgeted at my heart. There's no extra money. What we came to the table with GCOM and department said, okay, you know, 18 months, you know, fine, it's good. What are you going to show for today? What can you show in the next 18 months? And so we had that intentional discussion as to what can you bring to the table? And so to the table was brought in, hey, you know what, a tax policy simulator, we are having, we'd like to, you know, control the receivables and do analytics out there because they've done it. And so that's actually on the table. And so there is no additional money. The BAFO is very clear. Based on these implementation, these milestones, they'll get paid. There's no additional money in advance or later on that ties to the policy simulator. So this is literally GCOM and DOR sitting together and saying, look, this is new, doing this for the first time, okay, what do you got to show for? And that led to this conversation about what can you bring to the table. And just to let you know, there might be other early wins, but we feel fairly confident on these two based on our conversation. So no additional money. The timeline is coming once we decide as to, you know, we get all the requirements down and then it'll be released. Hopefully that satisfies you, Rebecca.
A little bit. Okay. Second question is, what is the status of the advisory committee that is set up in statute?
The advisory committee is, as per the plans that we have, as you know, Department of Revenue, you know, has a part in it, but there are other bodies out there that have to, you know, do their part. So as of right now, we're in the planning phases on coming up with the work breakdown structure. Okay, these are 13 members. I'm going off memory. And those members, who is supposed to appoint whom? And that's what we're going through that process. So to tell you the truth, it's in the early planning phases. Per the statute, there are others who are involved in it. So it's hard for me to have full control as to give you a timeline and say that, you know, these other bodies are going to appoint their members. Mm-hmm. So I'm inclined to say that we are doing our part in putting all the lineup as to what it is. And what I'd like to do actually is, if you wish, we can present your plan as to how this is going to go. If Mr. Chairman, if you're okay with that, Laura Lee, I know I don't want to put you in the spot here. The fact is that we do have a plan in place, who's appointing whom and when, and that's going to be in the works along with everything else we're doing. It's a separate work stream. But mm-hmm. today, I cannot tell you with a definite answer that I have a date for you as to when it's going to get done.
Thank you. For everyone's time sake, the presentation, that's a answer I understand is hard to get everyone appointed. Just look at ITAC. It's got some vacant members right now, too, that I'm sure JR would love to see filled. So thank you for that update. The last question I have, if I may, Mr. Chair, is has a third party review been done yet on this project, or has Gartner issued a report yet, or are they in the works on there for support? Where are you in your reporting structure with them?
Yes, Gartner, the IBM contract holder, has actually finished their review. And I believe it's an internal review right now. Yesterday we had an internal review and it should be coming out shortly.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, Rebecca. Any other questions from committee members? Lev, go ahead.
Mr. Chair, thanks, Niraj, for the update. I guess at a very high level, given the duration and the additional funding requested, I want to make sure I have the right kind of assurances that we've got, and you feel confident that we've got a commitment for both project sponsorship, which I think I can check the box on, but project leadership, both within and with third parties, for what you feel confident will actually be for the duration. My overall concern is that with projects that have this kind of duration in general, plus possible scope creep, plus lots of complexities, and I would not like to sanction is a green light to go forward, only to find out that, you know, we dropped key talent along the way, third parties didn't deliver as we had anticipated they would deliver. So I guess my initial concerns back in November were largely along the same lines. How would you respond, and how can you give us all, especially the voting members here, some confidence that the project's going to stay on the rails with the right level of both executive sponsorship as well as project leadership?
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Gonick, it's a good question. I would ask the same question. So I'm going to take you back in time in 2016 when I actually came to Department of Revenue. I came to Department of Revenue as an assistant director of taxpayer services, very involved in the program. And right behind me was Aether Analytics, who had just come on board. And people like Sarab and Megan Noonan and Peter Arena and Kamal Bharwani and Leah Cheney, all these people I have known personally. And they have been instrumental in multiple contracts with us, you know, when it comes down to the fraud analytics, stopping the fraud that's going out, RevHub case management, ASR analytics coming to do with your, you know, Echo, which is the Wayfair, which is out-of-state sellers coming and selling to the state of Arizona, and then they have not paid the fair tax taxes. So I have worked with these guys for the longest time. And then GCOM, when they purchased ASR Analytics, they came on site to see what's going on. They have put in substantial investment in this product. Kamal Bharwani, the CEO at that time, came down and said, okay, we want to buy ASR Analytics. Okay, how does it look like? So these folks have put in hundreds of millions of dollars to acquire ASR Analytics, and they have a stake in the marketplace. They recently acquired Encore. And now they are the biggest local and state municipal tax folks. And a lot of writing on this, okay? Not only that, if you look at our team itself, we have worked with them. Folks like Zach Sharp, for example. Zach and I have been whiteboarding this since 2018. And you have a lot of people in the IT shop who work with ASR Analytics. ASR is delivering even today. And we would not have gone through with these guys had we not felt they would deliver. Too much is riding at stake here. $28 billion have left we collect, administer, and distribute to 91 cities and towns, 15 counties, countless agencies, and regional tax authorities. There's a lot at stake out here. We personally have a lot of faith in them because we know these people. We are using the product as of right now, albeit it may not be the entire product, but we are actually using it as we speak today. And having said that, the chief executive officer, Kamal Bharwani, and the entire team came on site for 6 days to demonstrate good faith that, you know, they can deliver. And they have done substantial investment to make sure that they are in there. In the marketplace right now, we have just a handful of people. GCOM comes in and wants to disrupt the marketplace, and where we were getting bid like almost twice the amount GCOM gave, just because we had a massive surplus. You know, just 2 years ago, the prices were half, and now they came back with a lot larger prices. So GCOM comes in, wants to disrupt the marketplace and says, you know what, give us a chance, they can make it happen. We want to give them a chance for one reason, we believe in them. Because they are using the product, not the entire product right now. We know the people, we know the product, and they have stopped the state $200 million plus dollars and counting as you speak right now. So me personally have full faith. I don't want to speak for everybody else, but I have worked with these guys. Their office is right behind me. Mr. Chairman, Mr. Member, if you have any more questions on that, I can continue.
I will note, I just got a note from Lev that he somehow fell out of the meeting again. So I hope that we won't have to have you repeat too much of your answer to him. He should be rejoining here shortly. Stuart, why don't you go ahead while we're waiting for Lev?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, nobody can fill time like me. Yeah, I was not here for the November discussion. And as I was looking at the pitch, because I was trying to figure out, you know, kind of what this change was in reference to, I noted a couple of things that I'm wondering if came up in discussion and were resolved in November, or if I'm the first guy to come across them. The one is the 15-year contract term. My understanding is there's a statutory maximum length of contracting because of competitive procurement rules. I've never heard a number like 15. So that is a bit of a concern. The second is on page 13 of the PIDGE, there's an estimate of the amount of customized development required. That response is 100% customized development, which nothing I've heard in Niraj's presentation really goes to the kind of variability that exists when you get into not a COTS plus development plus customization, but a 100% custom built solution. So did either of those come up in November, Mr. Chairman?
So I know the procurement discussion did come up in November. We have, John, if you're on with us, you know, maybe have you go ahead and speak directly to Stuart's question around duration of a procurement and how that was handled from a contractual perspective.
Yeah, so you are correct. There is in statutes a limit of 5 years, but there is also the authority to go beyond that with a determination written for and approved by the state procurement administrator. So we tend to have several contract sets, usually somewhat tech related, APHIS, HRIS, you know, things of this nature where you're not looking to, you know, go for, especially when there's a long run up for the build and then go live and then have to turn around 6 months later and go out on the street again for another bid. So there are several times that we do go out longer. This one was requested and approved for 15 years for a lot of the reasons that Niraj had stated.
Understood. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, how about the 100% custom development?
I don't know that that came up in the November meeting. Chuck, do you recall, or any other members? I will.
Mr. Chairman, the direct question didn't come up. It was discussed a bit at the original project approval. I'm sure Niraj and team can address it from the RevHub primary functionality that's available today versus where they want to take it, their estimation of what that truly is. So I'll defer to Niraj.
Thank you, Chuck. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Member. Let me take you back to the original question about Senate Bill 1729 in statute. We had to invite vendors for bidding process, and Mr. Redhorse, you can keep me honest here, where we had to keep everybody open, even though they may not have done the system before. So we got bids, and the one bid that came in that we had money for came and demonstrated us a full demonstration project end to end that it can actually do the job. Now, keeping in mind is that they have not done this before. They have done small bits and pieces of it. That's why we are asking for 18 months for them to come and hang out with us and bring our best and brightest. We have put an entire team onto this project to build it from scratch the way we would like to have it. So because it's not a custom off the shelf product, we have given 18 months of design phase to make sure that they get what we're doing and then they'll build it for us. Some small parts are built. For example, the ResHub hardware and software stack is currently deployed to ADR data center and has been in production for several years. The DOR and GCOM jointly hardened the environment and the project as signed system security plan from DOR for many years. RevHub continues to receive individual income tax returns every day from DOR and process the return through various analytic models and workflows. Tax analysts use RevHub workflows, business rules, automation, case creation, case management, and reports in support of ADR operations. RevHub is integrated with ADR's current integrated tax system TADS. Now, having said all that, you're looking at corporate income tax, individual income tax, transaction privilege tax, luxury income tax. There are 26 tax types. We have to sit with them for the next 18 months and making sure they don't miss their mark, because transitioning from an integrated tax system that is actually functioning right now, but we have some audit findings we can do a whole lot better, to a new modern system, we want to make sure that it's taken care of 100%. Now, some would say, like I believe in the first meeting, Mr. Murray had actually asked me a question about the $79 million, what does it pay for? We talked that it pays for 15 years. It's all 15 years, yes. The first 5 to 6 years is going to be development, and the next 10 years is going to be that they will support us, and there's going to be no price hikes. So that seemed like a good deal. Contrast that with we're trying to build it from scratch. So if you're trying to build it from scratch, we do have some functionality. With the rest of it, we want to make sure that we hold GCOM accountable for 100% of what we're acquiring. Hopefully that answers your question, sir.
Hey, Mr. Chairman, if I could just follow up, having been through a similar situation with that appellate system, I want to just emphasize that a good deal is only a good deal if you get a product in the end. And I'm not sure I have confidence that there will be a product in the end. That could be because of the way, if you've ever been in a car accident, you can see the car accident coming again, even though it isn't the car accident. I may be a little overly cautious there, but that is the risk here. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thanks, Stuart. Rebecca?
A question for you, Mr. Chair, and because I don't want to rehash a lot of this discussion on the customer, that we've got a procured system and we're moving forward with the project.
Right.
How often will DOR come back to ITAC? And I sit here in advisory role, but I might suggest a similar stipulation with ITAC that the JLBC is recommending that DOR provide the JLBC staff a report twice in the next year on the status of that implementation plan, just to put more eyes and comfort on where they're going, so we don't get to next February with a project plan.
Yeah, I understood, Rebecca. And I think, again, ITAC committee certainly has the latitude to request more frequent updates. I do want to remind everyone that at a minimum, we're going to be getting the quarterly IBNV reports that will be coming through that will likely correlate with at least a quarterly informational update that would be available. And then, of course, at each point where it's always going to be like today, if today's change request were to go through, they may not come back for another change request until they get to the next spending phase, right? Which would be in that February 25 timeframe. So I imagine maybe this time in 24, they might be coming back to us again to talk about what's been accomplished and then looking forward. So, but I think that is definitely on the table for discussion amongst the committee, how frequently we'd like touch points and updates on progress. Lev, I know you had fallen out of the meeting and got back. I'm not sure what, how much you heard of the answer to your question before you lost access to the meeting.
Yeah, I think I heard the substantive response that Niraj gave, and I appreciate in the end that it was empathy. and I appreciate Rebecca's follow-on, and again, I think what we're all trying to do here is make sure that we serve in the right capacity to provide guidance, guardrails. And then I think I too agree with Rebecca, whatever is the appropriate manner in which to get regular reporting on status so that it's not after the fact that we get asked for additional extensions and or reports of lack of ability to deliver. And I think that'll also help Niraj and the rest of the team knowing that they're going to come back to talk to ITAC and hopefully with very positive news.
All right, Mr. Kirkland.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just want to concur with what's being said. I think the scary things for me on this one, not having been part of the discussion last month, it doubled in a year. The only vendor that came in and actually presented a project within budget was just selected. There's a lot of red flags. To Mr. Bruner's comments. So anything we can do to keep a good eye on it not getting out of hand with a vendor that is the only incumbent in this situation is something we need to keep a key point on.
Okay, so tell you what, before we, because I think we need to resolve this to the satisfaction of the committee before we would move to a vote on the change request, because you want to understand sort of maybe what the reporting updates would be. Before I move on that, Chuck, what do you got?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, I think we've all heard some of the concerns, and there's traditional things that the oversight group within AUA Asset does and can continue to do on this one above all of our normal checkpoints and oversight we bring in. I recommend we add to the conditions a quarterly update from the project team on the status of the project. We can modify that as we go forward. AUA Asset also reserves the right in all projects to request an update to the committee if they feel it's appropriate. But I think it's better to memorialize this for the comfort of the committee and for the Department of Revenue, so they know the schedule on which they'll be returning and how to plan out those report outs on successes and challenges. So if when we get a motion, we could just get a motion to modify the conditions when they're presented to include requirement for quarterly updates to the committee, we can keep it as simple as that.
All right. Thanks, Chuck. Committee members, I will put the question to you. And quarterly updates was actually on my mind is the right place to land. I think anything, you know, requiring something more frequent, not enough is going to change. But I think quarterly can give us a good pulse. And then I think we can depend upon DOA's oversight team. If they see something of concern, that they will raise it and we can have a good discussion. So with that in mind, any other questions before we move to reviewing the conditions and call for the ultimate question on this? Okay, staff, let's roll forward on one slide. Go ahead, Chuck, you want to review the conditions?
Yep, you have two conditions. These are the original conditions at approval. We'd like them to stay. Next slide, please. So you have a total of six current conditions based on discussion. Staff's recommending a seventh condition for requiring quarterly updates to the committee be added into the motion.
Okay, I want to give the committee members a moment to review the six conditions, and I think we understand the seventh being the request for quarterly updates. And is there any discussion about the conditions? Stuart.
Mr. Chairman, that seventh condition that we're pondering here would be pretty much a mimic of the sixth condition, but that quarterly report would be to ITAC rather than.
Yes, it would include, it would basically be the quarterly report to ITAC.
Yeah.
Yes, and there would be a, it wouldn't.
And yes. It would address the vendor's progress. It wouldn't necessarily be limited to cybersecurity controls for this system. It would just
be correct. Private. This will be the seventh condition would be for clarity, I'll say a quarterly update to ITAC of full project status.
Okay. Yep. Thank you.
And I imagine may also include any discussion of the IBNV report that would be also showing up quarterly.
I think that's understood, right? If you get an IVMV, it gets reported back to ITAC. So I don't think
right. But I think we can, from my perspective, Stuart, I think we'd be correlating those two things, right? The agency's coming through providing their project status report. We as the committee will have had the opportunity to see the IVMV report. That will inform questions and again gives us that third party view to status and okay. any areas of concern or focus that need attention.
That makes sense.
Mr. Chair, I'm ready to move with the amended seventh condition and look forward to advancing.
All right. Thank you, Lev. We have a motion. Do we have a second?
This is okay. Ryan. I'll second.
I'll let Ryan second. That's fine. He never gets a second.
All right. We'll record Mr. Murray with the second. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Thank you very much. Niraj and Mr. Woods and the rest of the DOR team, thank you for your hard work and preparation. We look forward to the continued updates and continued success on the project.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Appreciate you.
All right. With that, we will move to the second change request under consideration today. This is coming to us from the Department of Economic Security.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. My name is Bob Mussey. I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Department of Economic Security, who will introduce themselves shortly, followed by a brief overview of the project change request. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, on October 3rd, 2023, ADOA Asset approved the original project investment justification, page number DE24011, for the Department of Economic Security Division of Benefits and Medical Eligibility to procure OPEX return mail scanning machines that automate many document preparation processes. The Division of Benefits and Medical Eligibility is seeking approval on a change request for time, scope, and budget to procure a robotic process automation solution that will further automate the return mail process and allow them to meet regulatory requirements. I will now turn it over to the project team to present additional information regarding the proposed change request and answer any questions that you may have.
Bob, Mr. Chair, members, thank you for the time today. As Bob indicated, this PIDG originally started at a threshold under $1 million, and it was for the purchase of equipment to handle returned mail for our benefits and medical eligibility programs. Those programs see an average this calendar year of about 2,100 returned pieces of mail per day. As you can imagine, that volume of correspondence is overwhelming to try to keep track of. And so we partnered with our team over at Access to identify some funding that Access had available that had a short-term duration of which we had to get purchase of the equipment handled. So we were not able to include originally the robotic process automation that Bob mentioned in that original pitch because we did not have time to get that quote together, but knew that the long-term strategy around this return to mail process to really enhance and reduce the manual intervention that's needed would require that RPA capability. So we did put in the pitch for the equipment due to the timelines around the funding that was identified and available, and were successful in procuring that equipment. That original equipment was just over $200,000. Subsequent to that, we have worked with a vendor on state contract, UiPath, to talk about that RPA to really enhance and automate as much of this process as we can. So the original product project, was for the equipment. We have gone through, we have made the purchase of that equipment. It is being configured and will be delivered soon. And we anticipate that with this next phase of the project, that RPA, that we will be able to eventually reduce the number of staff that have to go in and manually update addresses in our system. From the current 15 staff that we've got doing that work, we will whittle that down to 8 staff after implementation and stabilization of the product. Next slide, please. So the original timeline was for May of 2024 to October of 2024. We are updating that. We are also looking at adding in the professional services from our partner UiPath to go through and create that RPA to take that data from those returned mail machines and be able to integrate that directly into our legacy applications to get those addresses and other information updated. And the budget is increasing from just over $260,000 to just over $1.26 million. And that funding is from Access. Next slide, please. So we are requesting today from the committee approval to move forward with development of that RPA product and implement that on those OPEX machines to fully automate that return to mail process and really reduce the number of staff that have to manually go in and do data entry. We all know that that is inherent with potential miskeying of information, so this RPA will help to alleviate some of those errors and also address the manual intervention that's currently required. Next slide, please. The change request, again, is to move forward with that RPA. We are in the process of getting those OPEX machines. There's two of them that we will be delivered after the first of the year once they're configured, and then we will develop that RPA process and get that into a go-live status by October of next year, and that will then allow us to reduce that manual intervention. The PIDG amount goes from, like I said, just over $260,000 to just over $1.26 million. Next slide. The solution is a Konica Minolta solution that we will be working with on the OpEx machines, and then we will again work with a state contracted vendor, UiPath, who is one of the industry leaders in RPA, to then go through and develop that RPA process. At present time, we've got about 22 staff that can't even handle 83% of the medical assistance return to mail. We'll have that down hopefully to 8 soon after implementation. And again, you can see the cost there of $3.62 per item for that returned mail to just over a dollar per item once we're able to leverage that RPA. Our ability to handle the increase of 735%, and then the new RPA solution will allow us to process about 697,000 pieces of mail annually. The original pitch was to go between October of this year and May of next year, and we are elongating that to October of next year to allow for that RPA development. Next slide, please. Again, just outlining the timeline, you can see the setup and training starting this month. Payment of invoices for the original equipment is March of next year, once that equipment is delivered and we validate that everything with the equipment is working. Phase two will be kicking off in January. That's the development of the RPA, the business requirements around that, and going through the sprints, which will kick off in February and run through the end of July. And then we'll do a review, look at any lessons learned associated with that RPA development process, and do the deployment. And then we will go to payment of invoices and close out by the end of October. Next slide, please. Revised project milestones. Again, that order build is in green status. The next phases of the project, the setup and training, that is dependent upon the verification of the equipment and getting staff scheduled. Certainly with the holidays, that is a little bit tougher, but we are working through that. And then we will go into, and I apologize, the revised start date for the setup and training is incorrect there. It's listed as 12/13 of 24. That should be 12/13 of 23, I believe. So apologies for that error there. And then payment of invoices for that first phase. The second phase, that RPA development, that will commence in January with the kickoff during that month, and then looking at about 5 sprints to get through that RPA development. The reason for that number of sprints, we are dealing with legacy mainframe applications for the Benefits and Medical Eligibility Program. So it is going to take a little bit longer to integrate that RPA with that legacy mainframe application. And then we'll do testing and lessons learned, and then the payment of the invoices. Next slide, please. Financial impact, again, going from just over $260,000 for the original equipment purchase, adding in the change request that we are talking about today of just over $1 million for that development of the RPA, bringing the total cost for the project to just over $1.2 million. Next slide. You can see a breakdown of the costs here for year one, the $1.26 million that we've been talking about. Ongoing support, licensing, and fees associated with that RPA are estimated at just over $600,000 for year two, $681K for year three, and then $728 and $779 for years four and five, bringing the total cost over 5 years to just over $4 million. And again, those funds are coming from Access. Next slide, please. The original project costs, you can see, were just over $260,000 for the 5-year term. And we will be upping that for the cost of the RPA. Next slide. And with that, Mr. Chair, members, I am open to any questions that you may have.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Committee, any questions on this project?
This is Representative Carbone. I have one question.
Yes, go ahead.
What were the, and I know you said, but can you just repeat, what was the total of all these projects going, and then, you know, year over year on the, is this an addition or is this just part of the average budget or the budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Carbone, I just want to make sure I'm understanding the question. The original PIDGE request for just the equipment was just over $260,000 for the initial cost. And then there were maintenance fees associated with that equipment for years 2 through 5. And then the RPA brought in an additional cost, which you see on the slide here. For the first year, that development piece is just over $1 million, and then it added to the ongoing costs for those years. Were you asking about those costs specifically, or how those costs were included in the agency budget for those for the initial phase and then for the out years?
Yeah, no, I'm just concerned as far as to the budget itself. It's the budget. If it's within the budget constraints, that's great. If it's above budget, in addition to going into the fiscal year, the next fiscal year, that's what I was asking.
Mr. Chair, Representative Carbone, our understanding from Access, and again, these funds are coming from Access, is that they have identified these as coming from their base budget. There is not an intended budget increase request associated with the project.
Perfect. Thank you very much for that.
Okay, we'll go to Rebecca and then Ryan.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. My question is also related to this slide and something you said earlier about being able to shift 7 employees from this manual process, which manual processes can also have data error issues. So automation, I understand that, but is there any savings if it's almost $700,000 a year for licensing fees and 7 employees, $100,000 with their salary ERE? Is my math correct there that it's costing about the same to do this?
Mr. Chair, Ms. Pereira, there is a cost differential. There is not a direct correlation to cost savings because, again, these funds are coming from Access. The staffing are actually DES staff. So there's a differentiation there in terms of where the budget dollars reside. Certainly with the workload that benefits and medical eligibility have today, those staff will be assigned to other duties to bring the caseload backlog that we currently have, apply that time to work those eligibility determinations and then the follow-up changes associated with any of those cases. So we won't necessarily be able to eliminate those staff. They will be reassigned to other duties that are currently going unfulfilled.
Thank you.
Yes.
Mr. Murray.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. Mr. Darmer, just wanted to confirm, because the original PIDGE and project was sort of, it mentioned specifically this was purchasing equipment that was standalone to scan this mail. Was that stored within DES architecture infrastructure previously, and is that changing as you're outsourcing some of this to Konica Minolta?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Murray, the information will be stored within my understanding, and we'll verify this, but I believe the information is being stored within the DES infrastructure in the cloud environment, but I will verify that and provide that information back to JR and the committee.
That would be good. Thank you. Because I know we initially assessed this project and said there was no ASRAMP required because it was all just 2 devices scanning stuff in your environment. But if that's changed, we obviously want to understand what that new infrastructure and architecture looks like.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Murray, understood. And we will get that information over to you as quickly as possible.
Perfect. Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions from the committee? Okay, if there are none, we can go ahead and let's take a look at the conditions that are currently specified. All right, these are the sort of standard two that we have. Any discussion from the committee on the conditions? I'm going to suggest one for consideration. Mark has already committed to come back and report out on confirming the architecture, but I think before proceeding with the project, that information be conveyed to Homeland Security and receive confirmation that there's still no requirement for ASRAMP and that no further review is necessary. Does that seem reasonable?
I would agree with that change.
All right. Staff, do you have clarity on that?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. What staff will do is add in the standard security condition into the project the committee is traditionally used to seeing. That'll put the safeguards in place that you're looking for. Right. And if anything is out of the ordinary, it'll require us to come back for a review.
So. Okay, thank you. So with that in mind, and the third condition as discussed, we'll take a motion with regard to the change request.
Mr. Chair, it's Lev. I'm happy to move the motion with the conditions and the added stipulations.
Thank you, Lev. Do we have a second?
Yeah, this is Jaggi. I have a second.
All right. Thank you, Jaggi. Okay. All those in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed?
It was a late aye from Mr. Murray there.
Yeah, we got a late aye, but we got the aye.
Indeed, sorry for the delay.
Okay, that's a unanimous vote. Thank you, Mark. Good luck with the implementation, but please do close the loop with Ryan.
Mr. Chair, members, we will absolutely get that information over to you as quickly as possible, and thank you for your time and approval today. We look forward to moving forward with the project.
All right. Okay, next up, we have an informational update from the Department of Administration on the AZ360 HRIS modernization project.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Justin Modulin, and I'm an engagement manager with the Department of Administration. I'm joined here today by members of the Arizona Department of Administration who will now introduce themselves and provide the committee with an informational update to the overall status of their HRIS modernization project.
All right, good afternoon, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sean Price. I am a deputy director with the Arizona Department of Administration, and I am the program director for HRIS. I've been the program director for HRIS since maybe late March timeframe, and I know this is the first time I've presented to the committee, and my deputy program director, Alba, is typically the one that presents, and I know she's present. So she can correct me, or if I do anything wrong, she'll tell me. So, my goal today for the committee is really to walk away with the confidence in the leadership and the management of this project is going well, and we continue to move the project forward. So I will do my best. We tried to keep this presentation at the right level for the committee, but obviously. We will take questions like normal, and if we want to get into the weeds or any details, I'm here to do my best to answer those. If we can't answer them, we'll get answers for those questions. So as I go through the presentation, please stop me with questions throughout. I just don't want to talk to everybody the whole time. I want it to be an open conversation if people do have questions along the path. Moving forward, the project is in red. The project has been in red since roughly the June timeframe and is continuing to be in red. And I will speak to that and I'll speak to the issues and mitigations around that and what we're doing going forward. Go to the next slide. Currently, same project timeline that's been presented since the project's been implemented. So we are still inside the configuration and development phase, IST, working on UAT. So we're continuing to move along this current project timeline, and we'll talk about where we're a little bit where we're behind and why we're behind and what we're doing about it in the presentation. You can go to the next slide. First off, I want to apologize. These metrics are wrong. We were in the middle of doing a pretty significant update of the JIRA, which is the solution that CGI uses to track all of our user stories, everything basically we were doing in the project. And we did CGI did a rather large update of their solution over the Thanksgiving week. And we are just now, within this last week, getting to where we have our metrics in place again. So I do apologize. But just know these metrics that we do show on this slide, and I know this has been a common slide that we've presented out to the committee, these are really are a lot of lag metrics. So these are telling us at the end, how did the week go? How did the sprint go, right? Metrics. And these metrics are centered around, as you can see on the config, and I know Alba's explained this a lot over the different committee meetings, but the functional configuration and unit testing. So these metrics are around what's our progress to plan of completing our configuration and getting into IST for the functional areas within this project. So I can tell you all of these areas have made progress, some of them actually some pretty significant progress. But as I'm getting metric updates right now, just give you an idea of as we're working through them. Time and leave is at 71.3% right now. It's at 51.2%. So, but I will, once I get an update of all these metrics, I will supply the committee the most recent metrics, and they should be here in the next couple of days. So I do apologize. And if there's any other questions on metrics, like I said, I know Doug Lang in the last meeting was talking about, like, what metrics are you guys watching? What are you looking at? How do you know you're making progress? How do you know you're moving forward? Well, this is a snapshot, like, say, from a lag level. I thought about bringing more metrics to this meeting and really getting into the weeds, and I can do that right now if people want more data, but we look at a series of metrics. We have what we call our consolidated sprint plan. It digs deep into every area within the project. And I'll talk a little bit more about data conversion in the project, but I can tell you where every data conversion is, what's our planned target to get that done. And I can tell you exactly where we're at in the process of every one of those data conversions, right down to that level. And it's tracked every single day to that level. And that's across the project. And so we have lots of detail, and we're looking at those constantly to make sure things are moving forward. And if there's roadblocks, obviously, we're tackling those roadblocks and problems and clearing those so we can continue to move those, move everything forward within the project overall. So, you can go to the next slide. So I wanted to get a little bit into, you know, why are we in red and what are we doing about it, right? So the issue, you know, some of the biggest, I mean, we have issues, there's constant issues across the project, right, of this size, and we're constantly problem solving and implementing countermeasures to those issues. But some of the really big issues that have been going on for some time really center around our data tables and conversions, right? And, you know, the level of complexity of developing those data tables and then working through the data conversions has been, just being honest, the effort it has taken has been far greater than we thought it would, right? And obviously the complexity of those data tables, we're pulling data out of a 20-year-old system, right? It's not 100% clean. You know, obviously there's issues. And then we're taking that out of a super customized 20-year-old system, right? And then taking that and aligning that to a modern configurable solution, right? So we were re-engineering some of the data. We're moving something might have been in five different fields in the old system down to one field in the new system on these data tables. And the other piece of these data tables is some of them were 100 lines and some of them were 50,000 lines, right? So, I mean, like you're talking massive data tables that were being developed. And then as we go into the data conversion piece of these tables is, you know, there's challenges, right? We're in the midst right now of, you know, knock on wood, at the final stages of completing the what we call our position status maintenance table, which is a table of over 55,000 lines. This is basically the parent table of all the data in the solution. It is all the positions in state government. And then the next big table, which is essentially rolls up underneath this along with the majority of our tables, is our ESMT, which is our employee status maintenance table, which is probably roughly 40,000 lines. And that's all the positions we have in state government are going to be rolling up into that. So we're in the midst of completing these tables. We're running, hopefully this is going to be our last really solid run of PSMT and with very few errors coming out from that table and getting that implemented. That's really going to be a big step for us as we move forward with these data conversions. And obviously there's 160 data conversions in this project, and we're working a lot of them obviously simultaneously. A lot of them are moving forward. So, but this is just the big one. So I just kind of throw that out there, just the context and the size and the magnitude of the data that we're working with. But then in at the end, the great thing about the data is both our HR data and our financial data are going to sit in the same data schema. It is the same solution, right? It's essentially our two largest data sets in state government, right, are going to be on the same platform. So there's a lot of opportunity moving forward in the future, you know, as we get to the end and what we can do with this data. So I know I'm like a little bit off. I don't do a great job like following bullet to bullet in a slide deck. I'm not Niraj, man. That guy can run through a deck like nobody. So that's our issue, right? So what have we done about that, right? So we got behind on these data conversions and these data tables. And so what we did is we took a step back a couple months ago and we said, okay, where are we behind? Why are we behind? And then when I put rebaseline, I know the kind of words kind of off, but we said, what did it really take to get those data tables done and those data conversions done? What is the level of effort? We took that and laid it against all the data conversions that we have left, right? And that pushed our project where we were supposed to get data conversions done at the end of sprint 12. That's telling us we're going to get done at the end of sprint 17, right? So essentially a 5-month delay. We're 5 months behind on these data conversions. And so we said to ourselves, okay, what are we going to do now? How are we going to pick up and the time that we need to reduce that? Because we can't be 5 months behind, right? And keep moving with this project. So we started a couple months ago, started putting in mitigation efforts to reduce that backlog and to get those data conversions done. So what have we done? And then I'll talk a little bit here. And then the next slide, we'll talk a little bit more about resources. But a lot of it is adding resources to this. On the state side, we've added a couple new developers. So we contracted in two new developers on top of the two developers we have already contracted and that have been on the project from the beginning. So increasing resources, which will pick up the speed for around these data tables. So another big piece that we did in last sprint is we, along with understanding the delay, we part of the mitigation is really a refocus of prioritizing resources. Prioritizing essentially everything in the project to get these data conversions done. So the senior leadership team came out with a prioritization list of what we work from very first all the way down to the last thing in the project. So all of our teams know that what the priorities are. So we diverted full attention to the data conversions, and we took some people off of other areas of the project that could support this to get this caught up. And knowing that it would delay some of the other areas, but it was critical that we focused on these data conversions. I know I keep saying that, but these data conversions are a critical path. So before I jump into the project plan, so I just want to talk about one other thing I missed, and I actually wanted to start this project on it, but this presentation on it, because I know not everybody on this call is obviously in the weeds of this project, right? You get what we present out to you in the ITAC meeting, and you hear things around state government more likely. But I want to talk about like what we're seeing in the solution. So from a configuration standpoint, a large majority of the solution has been developed and configured, right? It's live. So we actually started a couple of weeks ago, we started actually doing business process demos for a large number of state employees. So we've had over 1,500 state employees on live demo session, video conference calls over the last couple of weeks to show state employees the solution. So our team at DOA that's working on the project is logging into the solution and is walking HR employees through the solution live. And so those demos have been completed. They are the solution. The only piece that's missing is the data component, right? So I wanted to tell you guys that, tell everybody, the committee, that, because it's a real solution. You can see it. You can feel it. The feedback that we received from these state employees that were able to see it, they were super excited. There's a ton of functionality in this new solution that's going to definitely help our HR teams across state government. So I just wanted to throw that out there. I was actually going to start with that. I'd love to start with something really positive. It was really exciting to see. It's not like we're going to get to the end and then hit live and never seen anything before, right? So we're actually seeing it. So I'll get back to the presentation. I just want to jump out on that piece of positive notes. So, all right. So, just a little bit more about some mitigation and some of the things that we're doing. So one of the things that we've developed is a more, I wouldn't say more advanced project plan, but a more in-depth project plan on the state side, because there's a lot of work on this project that is also on the state side and also on CGI side, right? And it's really intertwined. But we wanted to extract out and say, okay, what is the state responsible for? What do we need to get done? And it's like one example of that is the state is responsible for UAT. And so user acceptance testing. So we wanted to make sure we had that pulled out, a full plan developed for UAT, and that we started following the process of what we needed to do on the state side for UAT as an example. So that plan's been developed, that plan's been implemented, and we're working that plan for the project. There's work in there for data conversions and interfaces and BI, so the reporting. I mean, so there's a lot of work. There's actually also work in the project that's not, quote unquote, not in the contract, not in the plan. That's like our data strategy plan. So doing, you know, cataloging our data, cleaning up our data, whatever it may be around data, that's another component that's on the state side that we need to make sure we have a solid plan and moving that plan forward. So, all right. So, you know, as the leadership, we continue to improve around our daily stand-up meetings. So we implemented a new structure, a new Scrum structure about 3 weeks ago. And so we have daily stand-ups every single morning at multiple levels. We do an initial like tier one structure at 8:20 time frame, and then then all the roadblocks and issues in those meetings then travel up to tier two, which is the leadership team for the project, and that's at 8:40. So that new structure has been put in place about 3 weeks now. That's helped tremendously. You know, from a communication standpoint and really understanding the roadblocks and the challenges that our frontline leaders are having and escalating those. So the feedback that we've received from the teams is it's been tremendously helpful to reduce the waste and start getting some decisions made on some of the areas that were having problems or roadblocks. So that was another big piece that we put engaged from a mitigation standpoint. I think we've probably talked a little bit about IST, that we did reduce IST by 4 weeks. So that was one thing that CGI did to essentially de-scope it a little bit so that we could pick up some time. And so we're working towards getting the IST done in the 16-week time period. So what actually ended up happening with this is we delayed the start of IST by 1 month. And we also did a staggered approach into IST because as of right now, benefits, payroll, and time and leave have still not entered IST. They are still in that development phase, which you saw on the metrics chart. So, but every other area has entered into IST and is working through IST. So, you know, some of the things that we're looking at around the project scope is pre and post go live evaluation. So we continue to evaluate all the work that we're doing and what we have in front of us to say, is this something we can wait on? Is it so? Like an example would be our BI reports. Like what BI reports have to be done for pre-go live, like before we flip the switch, essentially, right? And then is there reports on that list that says we can develop post-go live, right? Because the majority of the work that I'm going on reports are on the state side. So we're looking at those lists. We're also not only looking at that list from that standpoint, we're also prioritizing that list. So we know what's the most critical reports that we have to have for essentially to go into UAT. There is actually certain reports for payroll that have to be done for UAT. So we're prioritizing all those reports and just making sure we have a good process in doing what we need to do first to last. On all of those reports as one example, but we're looking at every area of the project. Another example from an interface standpoint is we're really focused on benefits and vendor interfaces. We're focused on the interfaces with the universities. So those are priority. They're first on the list from an interface standpoint. And then we'll get into, you know, agency interfaces and things of that nature. So just kind of give you an example of from a prioritization standpoint. So. All right. Alba, did you, I know that maybe you had, you wanted to add something around the dependency on data or a little bit more than I've talked about? Maybe I missed
that. Yeah, Sean, thank you. So just around the dependency, the reason that we're increasing our focus on the data tables and the conversion is because everything that the data conversion touches is going to be dependent on having that data available. So in other words, if you're looking at testing interfaces, you need to make sure that you've got real data to be able to test with. And the same is true for reports. You know, we need to have real data that we can extract and work with to be able to test those reports. And especially as we go into what's called user acceptance testing, UAT, we need to make sure that we're dealing with real state data that we can go in and look at to make sure that all of the functionality is performing as we expect it to. So that is why we're so focused on what Sean was talking about with the data conversions. And that's why it's such an important piece of our overall project. And that's the reason we've focused on it and are dedicating additional resources to it. So I just wanted to make that point, and that way the committee understands, you know, why we're focusing on that.
Thank you, Alba. Appreciate Thanks, that. Sean. Next slide, please. So this slide just we kind of threw it in there to just kind of show a representation of the large amount of resources we have added to the project. Obviously, I'm not going to go into detail on all of these, but you can see that we have added a fair number of resources, both on the state side and the CGI side since March of 23. And so, and we continue to evaluate that if there's, and like I said, we just added two new developers as of, I believe, this week, we're bringing them on. So we're continuing to look if there's a resources that can help us, we will bring them on. You know, and obviously a lot of people know in a project like this, it's very difficult to just go find a resource that can just plug and play into a project of this technical, this type of technical work that's going on. So that's really a struggle that we run into. So I won't dwell too deep in the slide, so it's there for reference. The next slide. Okay, so possible additional steps. So, you know, we're looking at everything in the project to say, okay, if we're behind up to 5 months with data conversion, right? We were, and we're continuing to whittle that down with the mitigation strategies, right? Starting to reduce, right? Picking up steam from that sense and getting better. But there's things that are always on the table or things we're constantly looking at, right? And then we're looking months and months ahead, right? Of potentially other things we do, right? We're looking at, you know, what can we do with user acceptance testing? Is there something we can reduce there? Could we, or in not reducing it, can we add more resources to it, right? Because a big piece of user acceptance testing is on the agency side. So we have the project user acceptance testing and then the agency side where we bring in agency resources to do the testing. Can we increase that? So we've had those conversations, right? So there's continual conversations like this going on through the project. And then the last bullet there is extending the project timeline. So where are we at with this? So we have put in place a lot of mitigation over the last couple of months, right? And so we want to see what this is going to do for us, right? So we're at a point now where we're saying, okay, we put in all these mitigation efforts, we've been on all this staff, we're removing waste from our processes and et cetera, right? And so we're going to run that into through the next sprint, right? So that's going to be into the end of the January timeframe. And then as a team, we're going to watch that continually day in and day out. But we're going to, at that point, we're going to make a determination is like, is it possible? Is everything we've done to this point enough to get us to September of 24? Or is there still a gap? And if there's still a gap at that point, we figure the only mitigation at that point is some level of an extension of the project. But at this point, we don't know what that is exactly and how much potentially. But we feel as a project team, based on everything we know and everything we've done, we should have a pretty good understanding going into the mid to late January timeframe if that's something we're going to have to do. And obviously, that's not a light decision for us. There's a large number of both impacts from a time standpoint, but also from a fiscal standpoint for something like that. So I would say to the committee, we would be coming to the committee if that occurs. And then probably in that February timeframe committee meeting, I'm not sure the timing of all of that. But if we need a change order for an extension on the project, is probably what we're looking at right now. So I just wanted to put that on the table for everybody on the committee. So, okay. Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I believe that's all I have at this point and open for as many questions as I can possibly answer.
All right. Thanks, Sean. We've got about, 5-6 minutes left. So committee, please bring any questions forward that you have on this informational update. All right. If there are none, I'll just say, Sean, thank you for providing the additional details. I appreciate kind of the closing remarks of understanding that, you know, you may not be able to mitigate the delays that you've experienced thus far in the project, and we'll be having to consider whether a change is required. I think that's the conclusion that the committee was coming to previously. And hadn't seen any evidence to the contrary. I think the additional details you provided in terms of the progress, continued progress, areas of progress, that's good. Pleased to see that. And I think, you know, I'm sure when you come back, we can get a further update on continued progress with accurate updated numbers and whatnot to support what you've been telling us. So if there aren't any other comments or questions from the committee, we'll call this to a close for the day. All right, folks. Reminder that our next... I'm sorry, was somebody got something? Nope. Okay. Our next meeting is scheduled for January 17th. There were two other items that were written updates only. You can let us know if you had any thoughts on those. We can address those before the next meeting. With that, thank you for your time and attention today. And we'll see you in January. Have a great holiday season, everybody.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye now. Thank you.
Thanks.
Merry Christmas. Bye-bye.
Goodbye, everybody.
All right, staff, let's go ahead and stop the streaming and the recording, please.